It's a beautiful morning.
Good morning, Barcelona. You're listening to 106.9 FM, Radio Canal Barcelona, English Radio in the Morning. I'm Virgil, and although I promised you or told you I wasn't going to be here today, I actually am. I just decided that New York can wait, because New York will always be there, and I'll always be here. But today is going to be interesting. We're going to be talking a little form of literacy. We're going to be talking about books. We're going to be talking about the thoughts behind a particular book. Joining us today are Alessandro Guiu, author, playwright, creative catalyst, along at the former guest and friend, social commentator, Mikhail Strubel. Welcome.
Good morning. Thank you to invite me.
Glad you're here. Glad you're here. And Mikhail, you're always welcome. You've been here oftentimes enough. So
great to be here again.
Well, Alessandro, you recently published a play, El Nacimiento, or The Birth, and Mikhail, you translated it into English. We're going to talk about the play and everything behind it in just a minute, but first I wanted to touch on the creative process. How does it feel, Alessandro, to give someone a product of yourself and then let them try to interpret your words, your thoughts, your emotions into another language?
Well, I think it's a question of trust. Me as a creator, I have to trust the translator, obviously, which is a very difficult work, I think, because it's much more than simply translate some sentences. The goal is trying to be as loyal as possible to the aim of the story, and I think Mikhail was.
Okay.
I appreciate very much the work of Mikhail. He helped me a lot, and moreover, he also asked me for some doubts or decisions that he had to take at the end.
But it worked. It worked. In that same context, how did you feel? Did you have any particular pressure or responsibility in your translations?
Well, I didn't know Elisenda, so when I offered to translate it, I said, will you let me translate the first scene and see how it goes? Because I'm not a professional translator myself. But I felt up to it because it's a play. It's colloquial English. It's not literary terms.
Right.
It's not poetry. It's fairly easy in inverted commas, which the listeners can't see.
Well, yes, again, they're on Facebook today. They can see us.
Good to translate. So at the same time, I haven't lived in England since 1974, which means that the young people here, having translated them into English, would have been speaking some 1970s colloquial English. So we got some help. A friend of Elisenda, who is of a younger generation, helped me polish some expressions.
So not only was the language, it was generational at the same time.
Very, very, very clearly, yes.
Okay, well, we want our listeners to feel free to come in and comment on what we're talking about today. They can call in at 934-68-5555. And you're just going to tell me something, Elisenda.
Well, I was going to explain one of the facts that you found, Mikhail, is that my play is bilingual. The original play is the characters speak into Catalan and Spanish. So he, as a translator, he had to have a decision about what to do about that.
There's some things you just simply cannot solve.
Yeah.
So there's something lost in translation, but I mean that's a well-known expression.
And it's also a good movie, too.
Yeah.
We'll be back with our guest right after this. And that was Forgive, Forget by Dinosaur. Well, let's talk about The Birth. It's a work, as you say, centered on the birth of a son of a Catalan person in Madrid on the day of the referendum of independence, 1 October in Catalonia. But it's not intended to be a historical chronicle nor a political treaty. How would you both characterize it?
Well, to be honest, I have to say that I wrote the play in 2015, which means that it was 2 years before the 1-0 referendum. No one could imagine at that moment how a referendum would look like, finally. The so many things that happened. If I had written now this play, for sure that would be very different. But I think at the end, I talk about a situation in a family, you know, that have different ideas. And it is useful before, now, so that is the...
So it's like it's a family drama in some ways.
Yeah, for sure.
Now, Miguel, you had, you and I, we've talked going back a couple of years, as a matter of fact, about the whole issue of independence and all of that. How did you view the play when you first read it in the context of what you had in terms of your involvement with the political process here?
Well, let's say Elisenda sold me the product very quickly and very easily. I found the prospect of actually reading the play fascinating. Mm. And in fact, I deliberately translated it as I read it. In other words, I didn't know how it would end, put it that way. And you mentioned the 1st of October, but I mean, that happens to have happened on the 1st of October. But as Lisenda said when she wrote it, she didn't even know it would be held, you know. So let's say that it's a political context in which this play happens. Mm-hmm. It is just on one day, isn't it? I mean, it's just a few hours on the day of the referendum.
Yeah. And this is a pretext to talk about different ideas, different ways of seeing a fact, no? Mm. Different feelings, people that feels independence in a way, or people that is against it. Mm-hmm. That is what I was hearing at that time, 2 years ago. We already were talking about all this.
Right. But then from your standpoint, when you were actually translating, having had the experience prior to 1 October and of 1 October, did that influence how you interpreted what you were reading?
I had actually finished translating it before the 1st of October. So let's say that didn't affect me directly. It wouldn't have affected the translation itself because obviously the translator is constrained by the text.
By the words.
Having said that, I think the way Lisenda portrays the relationships between the Catalan members and the non-Catalan member of this family of two couples, I think has acquired greater meaning even than the time when she actually did the writing.
Mm-hmm. Actually, the book was published on October.
Okay. But again, you know, now you said, you know, it really does have nothing to do with the actual political events, but when we started looking at some of the actions, you know, surrounding it, you know, aren't there really points in the story that are relevant to the political situation we face today, Elisenda? Or whichever one wants to take it.
Well, what I mean by that is that the world is full of difference. It's full of differences. In other words, you might have many differences at the last. No, the difference is how we behave with them.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. It's a play about personal conflicts. I mean, conflicts within a couple,
right?
Within another couple, between sisters, between people of different origins. And so let's say politics is a backdrop, but there's an awful lot of sort of stereotypes included in it without it being farcical, let's say. I mean, she could very easily have fallen into a kind of slogging match of goodies and baddies. No, I think she brings out each character very, very neatly.
Yeah, I think in some way they are stereotypes, but in some way they are quite real, as we can know somebody as very similar to these characters. For instance, if I can explain you a little bit about the characters, the four characters of the story. Mm-hmm. Jaume is a very strong independent supporter. He's been dedicating himself to politics. He doesn't care too much of his wife, and his wife, Montse, has had enough about it. Jorge is a quite a stubborn guy from Madrid. He tries to be polite and politically correct, but he really can't. So Lali, his wife, doesn't express her own political thinking only for the reason not to argue with her husband. Mm-hmm. Her sister Montser instead thinks Lali should be more honest with herself and say to Jorge what does she really think. So,
well, I think the thing that, you know, looking at the reviews, I think was a quote that you gave. You said that there are far more conflicts in the world than the political conflict for independence. I love that phrase. I mean, what did you mean by that?
We were having a coffee before coming in. You know, I mean, right. Even Madrid, Real Madrid, and Barca reach kind of conflict level, and that is that politics. We could discuss that, but certainly in the play, it's a great deal about social conflict and a great deal about personal interpersonal conflict. So it's a play at several layers,
on
at
several
once.
Levels of, of interest. And I think that's the thing of looking at the conflicts, because we do have, you know, Barca versus Real Madrid, which is a major one. You know, it is this is the classic, and there are obviously cultural differences between the societies of Madrid and Barcelona, and within the families, there's going to be conflicts as well.
I'm very active on Twitter. I'm not sure about Elisenda, and I sometimes get quite offensive reactions to tweets of mine, which I try. I know they can all end up in the prosecutor's office, right, as we are now, and don't laugh. I mean, I know people who have been dragged before the courts for tweets on the pro-Catalan side. I get offensive tweets back sometimes, and I think, I pray to God he isn't a Real Madrid supporter. And time again, I'm confounded. They are Real Madrid supporters. So let's say that does reinforce, unfortunately, if you like, my prejudice. It is real evidence from time to time. There are no tweets in the play, but there's a great deal of WhatsApp, isn't there?
Yeah, for sure. Jaume is the king of the WhatsApps.
So you're bringing in a lot of the realities of today, where I guess there's been a lot of research done where we are reading less as a society, where in America there's only like 40% of the people who've actually read one book in the last year. People are not writing anymore. They're tweeting or using WhatsApp. Is part of the play about the relationships we now have that are disjointed? We don't talk to each other directly anymore. We talk through tweets, we talk through WhatsApp, we talk through email. Is that also part of the construct that's in your relationships?
It could be, because in that case, maybe better not to talk a lot, because when they do, happens what you will see when you...
Sparks fly, let's say.
Yeah, sure.
Well, but I think that's also good, too, because, again, it's better that the sparks should fly instead of being built up inside of you to have the volcano one day
I agree with that. In my case, I think.
Well, I mean, towards the end of the play, Volcano is pretty close to a correct assessment of the situation.
Okay, well, we won't peep the whole card yet and tell what the end is. But we'll be back with our guest right after this. And that was Lost Prophet by Sherman Irby from Wynton Marsalis' Jazz at Lincoln Center Orchestra, one of my good buddies. Well, we're back with our guest, and part of the commentary that Elizondo has given us is that The Birth is really a portrait of relationships, couples, friends, political and nuclear families, and the bonds that are established during a time of maximum political turmoil. Now, having seen families here in Barcelona split by the politics of independence movement and the motions behind each side, what are the life lessons seen and captured in the work that you can bring to us?
Well, me personally, I know some families whose members have opposite ideas, but they respect each other. However, I have the chance to attend some book clubs where different people I didn't know had read the play, and there was a Q&A afterwards. And there, I learned about many situations like the ones you mentioned, or like the ones I wrote.
Right.
So at the end, it was not unusual or an exception. What do you think, Mikael? Do you know some families like that?
I mean...
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Let's say in my own family, we have people living here and there. And let's say there's a subject which for years and years we have... just steered clear of. It wasn't even the independence movement. It was sort of Catalanismo in general. Just don't raise that in front of, my cousin's husband, because he'll start off in making things a bit rougher. The whole play is an attempt, particularly by the two sisters, to get their husbands not to talk about the subject.
That is the point. The rule. The rule of the family is not to talk about that. Right.
Whatever you do,
don't say.
A baby's been born today. That is the only subject. Well, they do their best, let's say, to stick to that rule, but they don't manage it.
But I think that is what happens in many families, that they prefer don't speak about that, just to avoid the discussion.
We see that a lot. You know, there's a group of us, we get together every Friday night to have wine, and there are two brothers. Each of them was on either side of the discussion.
Uh-huh.
And it got to the point where they couldn't come in and drink together because it was just going to become an all-out rout, you know, where they're pro-independence, against independence, and they just couldn't have a civil dialogue anymore, even over wine. So it was to show you how serious it was.
But, excuse me.
No.
That, don't you think that's a pity that we cannot talk about everything?
Well, see, yes and no.
I think tolerant?
I think we've lost the concept of tolerance. I think this last election in the United States created a whole new genre of politics. As we've seen it in France, we've seen it in Germany, we've seen it in Italy, where tolerance, courtesy, intellect don't really exist anymore. It's a matter of, all right, what's the soundbite? What is the fake news saying? Can we make our fake news better than your fake news? And people are dividing along those lines because in many cases they aren't thinking and they aren't talking. They would rather believe what's in a particular newspaper or on a particular TV show because it saves them the time and effort of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have to think and form an opinion based upon fact. They can say, oh, I saw it on Fox News, or I read it in this newspaper, or I read it in La Razón. It becomes reaffirming for them without having to do the work of developing their own opinion. And I think the problem is that we've become a society, and I should be letting you guys talk instead of me talking, but I think, you know, what's happened is that as a society, we have lost sight of ourselves. We don't really know who we are anymore. And so because of that, the process of trying to understand who we really are is almost monumental, that we don't want to take the effort. So we'd rather just fall back and let somebody else define us.
Mm. Maybe you're right.
Well, I could be. I could be. And I could not be. So, no. You know, but it is.
No, I agree. I agree in that.
My UK side, which is half of me, has not recovered from the Brexit process,
right.
which again was very much goodies and baddies,
yeah.
Seen from, I was going to say the baddies side, which would be to fall into the cliche, let's say. But people opposed to staying in the union used all sorts of pretty, let's say,
dramatic,
arguable
right.
Reasoning. and a great deal of identity. And the identity issue has been brought in, I think, mainly by the unionist side in Catalonia. But, I mean, we're not here to discuss politics. And once you get identity involved, it becomes us and the others. And that makes dialogue very, very difficult.
Well, even that's the whole thing, is that we've lost the ability to dialogue. You know, we are only concerned about taking sides and really just saying that my side is better than your side. And so the family is the same kind of thing. I mean, I think you've got maybe three sides in the family as I'm listening to you describe them. You've got the men, you've got the women, and then you've got the families together. And it's, you know, it's like the old story, you know, there's his side, her side, and the truth. And so...
That's right. So
I think, you know, when you look at that, when you were constructing the relationships and constructing the dialogue that was going to be part of the play, did you have a particular point of view? Did you see the women being, obviously you saw them as the peacemakers, you know, holding the family together to keep the men from fighting? Did you think that that is a, it's a new question I'm giving you.
Yeah.
I'm just throwing it out here.
It's good.
So it's a case of, you know, do you see that women are by nature somehow more conciliatory? They're willing to make agreements more readily than men?
It could be. I'm a woman. But in my personal opinion is that women are a little bit more like this, how did you say?
Conciliatory,
yeah, I think so. Maybe we are also more used to, more open to listen, you know? I mean, the thing is not to be stubborn.
Stubborn.
I think women in general, we are less stubborn than men.
I don't know about that.
So that is the first step, just to be open, open-minded, and open to listen overall. Because we don't listen to each other, there is no dialogue. That is what we were saying.
Right.
You know? So, but of course, we cannot talk about all the women and all the men. You already know that. But in general. And in that case, in the story, I think it's like that.
Okay, I think that makes sense. Mm-hmm. We're listening to 106.9 FM, Radio Canal Barcelona, English Radio in the Morning. We'll be back with our guests right after this. And that was Kenny Barron with the song called Baile. And for those of you I know who are dancing in your chairs at work, hopefully this one had you going. Well, we have a caller on the line who wants to talk to our guest. Gerard, put him through.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I would like to ask Michael Strobel, how did he manage to succeed in his translation of part in Catalan, part in Spanish, in Castilian?
Thanks for that question. And I did say before that things get lost in translation. I remember a play called Translations, where that actually is coped with. Some people speaking in English, some people in Irish, and in fact the whole play is in English. I think it is clear to people listening to the play or reading the play by the very name of the character, who is Jorge, and he is presented from the very first moment as being from Madrid and being a Spanish speaker. That on that side, there's no doubt. What is lost is when other characters speak in Spanish with him, being Catalan speakers. And then there are a couple of awful situations in which there are puns or there are misunderstandings, or for instance, the name of the baby is given a special added meaning. What was the baby called?
Maca. From Macarena.
It turns out to be from Macarena, you know. So the pro-independence man is very pleased that they've called her Maca.
Right.
Until,
which means beautiful or
beautiful,
nice in
nice,
Catalan.
Perfect. I mean, I don't know anyone called Maca, but...
Yeah. But we use the word a lot.
When, of course, he's told that that's a short for Macarena, which is with Jorge's grandmother's name, things fall flat. That is completely lost, unfortunately, in the English translation. Mm-hmm. We did also discuss, I apologize for this. We did discuss whether or not to translate the names of the four characters. I think Eulalia was, Elisenda was perfectly right in insisting that their names be
May I add something? I think in my case, the use of bilingualism had the only sense to be the more realistic as possible. So in the translation, if the it was more natural and realistic to use just one language, that was all, no? in my opinion.
I would say at least 80% of this play could be portrayed in a Scottish setting. Where the birth takes place in London or Manchester, and in fact they're all speaking in English with different accents, maybe,
Or in the Flemish part of Belgium,
or if you like. Yeah. And there would be just a 20% where there are, very clear stereotypes and prejudices we might talk about later.
Yep.
That are very localized, let's say.
Well, thank you for calling in. Prompted a lot of good conversation.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks. Thanks very much.
So, getting back to what we were talking about earlier, there was an excerpt from the synopsis that I particularly liked that said, on the eve of the referendum day on the independence of Catalonia, the daughter of Jorge and Eulalia was born in Madrid. The next day in Barcelona, brothers and sisters Jaume and Montse exercised their right to vote early in the morning, and despite the reluctance of Jaume, a pro-independent militant, they go immediately to Madrid to meet their niece. A few hours later, the birth of a Madrilenian clinic, the meeting of the four characters takes place, which will show how they relate to each other based on the ideas of each one. So in looking at that, I have to ask you, were there people who were in your real life that you were able to make these characters, or are they really, I won't say figments, but characters that you constructed based upon your own opinion upon how you wanted things to go?
Well, to be honest, I tried to create four characters that none of my friends or relatives could say, that's me. Or maybe most of them could say the opposite, that's me, you know. I guess I wanted the readers or the audience to be able to identify some friend or relative because they are not unusual but very common. And on the other hand, I try, me as a writer, not to be a character, but I think I give little pieces of opinion in every character, you know.
Well, you can't avoid it.
Yeah, I can't. Sure, I can't. I mean, maybe consciously or not, but you do. You give your opinion as you write a story, whatever.
Look, you know, again, you know, not being a writer, but my creative bent is photography and music, but I see that if you are a person of intellect and you are involved in the world, you have to give your opinion one way or another. You can't just say, oh, I don't have an opinion, because it's not true. And I think you as a creative person, mm-hmm. trying to get across a concept, even though it might be fictional, there's still some part of reality that you bring to it.
Well, I think the creators, we have it easier because we can give the opinion through the character. So for me, it's easier than now if you ask me here.
Right.
You know, and also because you can have different opinions. I mean, not exactly, but you can give different point of views and maybe all of them are useful for you.
Mm-hmm. Now, Miguel, in your prologue, you wrote myths and stereotypes, even the prejudices sometimes, in some cases, have made silence prevail over sincerity. I love that phrase. But throughout the story, the two most relevant contextual events, the birth of the child, the celebration of the referendum, the silences will disappear, with surprising confessions by some of the characters, and needless to say, for the reader, as the work reaches its climax. Explain that.
Which we won't reveal,
no,
obviously.
No, we won't reveal the ending, no.
I think Elisenda has been very successful in avoiding the four characters being stereotypical in themselves.
Mm-hmm.
But I think particularly the two men address each other on the basis of a fabricated stereotype of the other, you know. This guy is a typical madrileño, and therefore he's against this, and he's going to say that. And in the play, well, you know, there are some elements which support that idea. And mm-hmm. in the opposite direction, and mm-hmm. also despite his wife pleading, please just don't get involved in politics, in the opposite direction, the madrileño treats the Catalan husband, or brother-in-law, as in some ways in a stereotypical fashion. So breaking down those stereotypes, and the two women are key in that, I think is very important in that particular relationship.
Mm.
But of course, they're two couples with their own relationships, with their own, let's leave it at problems rather than, you know, crises. Let's leave it a problem so that the reader has something, you know, tantalizing to listen to now and to read later. Again, as we said before, there are issues at different levels. And I think Elisenda is very successful in breaking down the barriers to understandings. Well, just to bring things out into the open. In other words, silence is golden, according to the song.
You're right.
But it does sometimes allow things to rot. And perhaps the rot can be stopped if things are talked about.
I would agree with that. I think that if we look at, again, we're operating again off of so many stereotypes because we're not necessarily forming our own thoughts, but having them formed by someone else. And we merely regurgitate, you know, those thoughts out there in terms of sound bites and arguments and whatever. And again, we've talked about British politics and we talk about Belgian politics and Italian politics and French politics. As we've seen, there's been a evolution of political conversation and dialogue. What do you take from this play? And I'll throw it to you, Miguel. in terms of what needs to be done to break down some of the politics that we, or stereotypes that we face here in our lives every day?
Oof, that's a daunting question, isn't it? Well, daunting issue as a whole. I think there should be a much greater control of the media. We talked about fake news. Catalonia is being bombarded from the outside with fake news every day. I've often said, if I lived in Toledo and I believed everything I hear and see on TV or read in the papers about what's going on in Catalonia, I would be, oiling my shotgun, getting ready to come here. And in fact, police were sent here to chance of a por ellos, extremely aggressively, because this climate has been built up on the basis of fake news, which itself was based on prejudice and negative stereotypes about Los Catalanes. That's a very one-sided view, okay? Mm. But that one-sided view also wants to get rid of Catalan public TV, it wants to wipe everything off the map. So what I would really think essential would be a much better, ethical control is not the right word, assurance by the media throughout Spain.
I think it's really the media throughout the world. I think what's happened is that we've allowed the media to become the news as opposed to reporting the news. Mm. Now, we had great commentators back in the States, Cronkite and all these other ones, who were reporting the news, and they would have comments based upon what they observed in terms of what the facts were. Now, facts have no meaning at all in terms of what do we want to say? How do we want to get the ratings up? How do we want to create something? Mm-hmm. And I think that's the difference in the world of the world.
And I fear you can see that in the Spanish courts right now. Yeah. As regards...
Absolutely.
Most of the political leadership of Catalonia on the independent side is either in prison or in exile.
Right. Well, we'll be back to talk with our guests some more right after this.
Apparently, and hurt was being born. but I got over that with no hard feelings. Dying, I imagine it will be the same deal, lonesomer maybe, but surely no more shocking or prolonged. It's dark as I recall, then bright, so bright. It's dark as I recall, then bright, so bright.
And that was A Happy Thought by Kurt Elling. And we want to have some happy thoughts here. Now, one of the reviews I read said that 1 October will still give us a lot of talk, and that Alessandra will have some role in Catalan cinema and literature, because it was a time of eclosion of feelings, sensations, frustrations. And the birth is the first step in that direction, that without a doubt she will go further. Now, what's your take on that, since they are seeing this expanded role for you somehow or another in politics, culture, society?
Well, in politics, I don't think so. But times to be a politician, I think.
Particularly a union, a Republican or pro-independence
I think so, politician. I think so. No, seriously, I am a writer, and I hope to go on writing stories. And as a creator, personally, I'm very interested in stories that happen now and here. So that they talk about things that are happening. I think it's a way that film, theater, and performances in general just make people think about the world where we live. However, sometimes you also need some distance, but at the same time, things happen so quickly that it's difficult to talk about them because they have already changed, you know what I mean? But, I think there will be more plays, more books, more stories about that issue, for sure.
Good. Yeah.
I was saying, you know, in translating it, I was thinking, gosh, this would be a really great play, perhaps to read in class, in lecture theatres, in Hispanic studies courses or in Catalan courses or Spanish courses, in universities across the English-speaking world, where it really puts on a platter some of the key issues in relationships between Catalans and Spaniards in this case, personified in a madrileño, if you like. And I think it would really lead to very, very interesting debates at university level, I think.
I think, well, even
yeah, because if not, if not, you can be, how do you say, adoctrinamiento, you know?
Mm-hmm. I mean, indoctrinating?
Yeah.
Right.
Mm. But in university level, you said. Right now, I would be keen, for instance, on writing the opposite trip of the birth, you know, somebody from Madrid that arrives at Barcelona on October 1st. That would be interesting to start a story, a new one.
Mm-hmm. Why not? It would be. I think the thing is that October 1st was a seminal moment, not only just in Spanish and Catalan politics and society. I think when the rest of the world viewed that moment, all of a sudden, we became part of their frontal lobe. They saw Catalonia and they saw Spain. They said, all right, what's the difference? And then it began to trigger people starting to think about, what is going on here? So I think it would be interesting not only to look at it from the standpoint of someone from Madrid, but say someone from New York. Because, I talked to tourists a lot, sitting out having coffee and just, they're very curious about this moment and what does it mean? Mm-hmm. And, you know, what is the issue? Why, you know, why are folks so exercised about it? Mm-hmm. So I think it would be an interesting play or whatever short story just to be able to take two perspectives or three perspectives and just see how they viewed it and how they see it.
Mm.
And I think it would be a great, great story that you could do.
The play doesn't indoctrinate in the least, but it really opens up a big debate on these issues.
Okay. Yeah, that's mm-hmm. the issue. I think.
No, I think, you know, again, you always want, as a writer, to have your readers remember what you've written. You know, what do you want your readers, or ultimately the playgoers, to take away from this work?
First of all, I expect people to have a good time with the play, of course, and I would be very happy if they are able to create a connection with the characters. At the end, that is what you expect when you tell a story, no? When you write a story. To have a good time, but moreover, if you get something else, well, to think about it, that's perfect.
That's good. Now, Miguel, you said that in a way, it's a story of outbursts. At a certain moment, the contemptions of each character are undone. Everything gets frightened, and everyone is released. Is that an allegory for the situation here?
Let's say that would be for Elisenda to answer more appropriately than I. And I would say anyone who goes to the play or reads the book could answer that question with as much authority as I myself.
Okay.
Let's say it's a kind of limit situation, isn't it? Critical at several levels in the play.
Mm-hmm.
So at one level you could take it to be an allegory of the situation, but at other levels, you know, it's far more personal, far more interpersonal, and not at all political.
The title itself could be allegory because it's the birth, you know, something is born.
Yes. Well, know? I think that's what I looked at. You know, they had this child.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the child is representation of many other things that all of a sudden come into being. Maybe the ability of the two families to see each other differently, the two men to see each other differently, a whole different thought to come out of it between the sisters, many things.
Mm-hmm. The future as well.
The future. Mm-hmm. Well, the thing is, you know, I am turned on. I want to go out and read The Birth. I want to get it. Where can our audience get more information about The Birth? Where can they buy it?
Well, at the moment, they can find the play published in Catalan by Arola Editors. Here, very close from here, there is Laie's bookshop. So you can find it there. But if someone is interested in reading it in English, they can find it in Catalan Drama website.
CatalanDrama.cat.
Okay.
Right.
Perfect. Perfect.
If they look up... El Naixement, for sure, mm-hmm. and probably Birth. I'm not quite sure how the search machine works.
Yeah, it is.
We'll find out and we'll post it on our Facebook page on English Radio so people will have it.
Thank you.
We thank you both for being here. It was a wonderful interview. I think we all went away having learned a little something and being inspired to learn a little bit more. For those of you out there listening, be sure to check us out on Facebook to see the link to today's show that you can pass on to family and friends. And hope you'll be back with us next week because it's going to be a great one. Have a great one today, Barcelona. We're going to leave you with a little thing by Eddie Henderson called Be Cool.